You're listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks.
And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Collins, and we've got a special guest host with us this week who is supposed to be here every week since the beginning and is finally making his debut on show number 5. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda. Yeah, I've lived a busy, busy life and haven't been able to get to the radio show here, so I'm here today. Let's get cracking and be a good show.
If you say so. And, of course, Chris is back with us.
I am, yes.
Who is, I would say, our steadfast co-host.
That's right.
Now that you've beat Sam for the second most amount of hosting.
Yeah. Oh, and we need to shame Sam.
Well, definitely.
Because he is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Uh-oh.
Gem and the Holograms.
So when he was posting about looking for somebody to go to that movie, that was tonight.
Yes. And
that frantic posting, he said to me, like, I can't make the show. That's because he was going to that movie.
Exactly. And I have nothing against Gem and the Holograms. I just have something against Gem and the Holograms movie, because this thing is going to be epically bad.
Horrible.
I got a friend of mine who's a manager of a Cinemaplex, and he said that this movie... And what's the other movie that just came out today? Anyways, it doesn't matter. But Gem and the Holograms, 3 sittings in a row, not a single person in the cinema.
Wow. And did it just come out today? Or Friday?
I'm not sure.
It's new,
so.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow, 3 in a row with no...
Not a single person in a single seat for 3 showings in a row.
I wonder if they look down and they just go, yeah, that's wasted money.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that's when they fire up the cameras and they record it so they can then just put it on the BitTorrents.
All right, so Sam is currently enjoying, hopefully, I hope he at least enjoys it. Now, I'm pretty sure that he will be the one person. As we established last week, Chris is the one comic book reader / Grey's Anatomy watcher. And so now we know comic book reader / Grey's Anatomy watcher / Gem and the Holograms movie enthusiast.
Oh, that's horrible.
So it just, you know, these tags just keep getting added to the back of his name here. Pretty soon it'll just be a walk of shame or something. But
I mean, if it did actually have some resemblance to the cartoon, which I did watch. You know, I was fine. If it did have any resemblance whatsoever, you know, there was an actual big computer that was shooting holograms onto people to make them look different, then I might actually go see it. But it's not. I put on a wig and a bit of makeup. You don't know who I am.
Well, if it works for Clark Kent.
Yeah, that's right.
I must be showing my age because I definitely did not watch Gem and the Holograms on TV.
Yes, and I am, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, and I watched all the great shows, G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, but not Gem. I've never seen a second of Gem.
Yes, I was explaining the bitter love triangle during the original cartoon to my significant other.
And it's too bad that Chris isn't here, Sam isn't here. We'll have to have him explain it next week. Because I don't know if you guys remember his epic rant he had one day about the love triangle when we were heading up to Toronto to go to some comic book stores. I was in the back seat with Sam, so you guys probably just tuned it out and didn't hear it.
But I was driving, so I was probably sleeping at the time.
He had a truly epic rant about it. And while still loving the show, he managed to I'm going to say, 5 to 10 minute rant about this love triangle. So maybe if there's another comic book enthusiast / Gem and the Holograms fan, they'll appreciate hearing his rant about how unfair that love triangle was. But that's for another show, because Sam's not here, and frankly, I think none of us really care.
Oh, we
about,
do.
No, about Gem.
Oh, about Gem, yes.
Yeah,
we of care course about, we care about Sam. Yeah, we just don't care about Gem.
That's right.
No, definitely
right.
not. And right. To make sure that it's on topic, there is a Gem and the Holograms comic book, which I'm sure none of us have read.
No, but no. It is more like the TV show.
Yeah, so it's more like the actual,
yeah.
What you would remember if you watched the show.
Is that IDW yes. putting that out?
I'm not sure.
I think it is.
It could be, yeah.
So I'm wondering what exactly the circulation is. Like, how well is it selling?
Well, I don't know for sure because I have never looked it up or care.
Exactly.
But I know at one point in time, like I think it's gone to a second printing for the number one, but that doesn't necessarily mean much this day and age.
They start printing second printings as soon as the first printing comes off the rollers.
Yep. Just like Scooby-Doo Adventures, Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 12, right?
Right.
This one featuring Scooby-Doo and Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. And it's being touted everywhere as the lowest print run for any Harley comic book. Except everybody ordered twice as much as normal of the Scooby-Doo title because Harley Quinn's in it. So now it's up to like 7,000, 8,000, which is actually, you know, it's still low, but it's not ridiculously low. This isn't a 1 in 1,000.
No, no.
And of course, those were going for big bucks on eBay for 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then everybody who bought them, thinking they could sell them for a giant amount of money, flooded the market. And I was bidding on one on eBay for $4 plus shipping, and I let somebody else have it at $4.50.
Oh.
So $4 is what I'm going to pay eventually for this comic book just to have it in my collection.
Yeah. But the next one sounded interesting too. What was it?
Was it with Phantom Stranger and Dead Man?
Yeah, something
it was
like
definitely
that.
With Scooby Dead Man.
Oh, some of them looked pretty epic, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that seems mind boggling.
Not to go too far backwards, but my Google skills are a little bit lacking, so it took me a little while to find this. But Gem and the Holograms was 156th on the September sales charts, 13,000 copies. That's like Gotham by Midnight numbers. Invincible sold less.
So,
how is Sex Criminals and Invincibles selling less than Gem and the Holograms? That's
now,
issue six, too. That's not issue one.
I have a question though. Is this orders or actual sales?
This is the Diamond Distribution sales. So is what Diamond sells.
So they sold that many to comic book stores.
Exactly. And I'm not sure if it's refundable because IDW does do refunds on their issues. So maybe any unsold copies got sold. But this is issue six. You know, you'd order heavy for issue one, two, and three. You wouldn't order heavy for issue six. By then you pretty much know who's pulling it and who's not. So that's actually pretty decent numbers. I mean, you know, they're not 1990 numbers, but you know, we've got Doctor Who, we've got Gotham by Midnight, Gem and the Holograms, MODOK Assassin, Batmite, Invincible, Sex Criminals, all within the same sort of sales figure. So that's pretty respectable. I'm actually kind of surprised by that.
All right. And you know what I'm kind of surprised by? That 8-minute detour.
There you go.
That we just took. Who says we need Sam in order to just go off on a tangent that has nothing to do with anything?
Well, it wouldn't have been a detour if my Google skills were faster.
Well, the whole conversation's a detour based on Sam going to that movie.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Right?
Like, so like Sam's fault again.
You could go right back to the beginning of this show and be like, there's where they went off the wrong, off the rails there.
So you're trying to tell me that Sam going to see this girly movie is actually a good thing for the show.
It's a fantastic thing for the show because Sam is normally the one that keeps us going. He's the one that keeps the words flowing or puts out the opinion that we have to go, wait, what did he just say? So now, you know, we've got a little ways on there. So, but let's, I guess we'll get started on our first segment of the night, our first weekly segment we do every week, which is, what did you buy this week? Anybody want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
All right, so last week I was mentioning that I bought a Jonah Hex comic book, slabbed comic book 9.8, signed by Jimmy Palmiotti, and I would just like to say that that came in this week.
Oh, nice.
I was very excited. Came in on Thursday, which happened to also be my wedding anniversary, so mm-hmm. it was a nice little present, and I it's got a nice signature on it. Now, Jonah Hex is one ugly guy. He's got, if you don't know, he's got half of his face is like just ridiculously scarred. And so this cover is kind of like the ugliest cover I've ever seen. It's just got his Jonah Hex's ugly mug on the front. And it's not a fantastic cover or anything, but, you know, just for the Jimmy Palmiotti signature, it's pretty cool. And then also, I am quite happy to have gotten a Captain Canuck number one from the 1975 series.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, Marty is the, I suppose we could actually say the world's greatest Captain Canuck slabbed collector at this point.
Let's be gentle here. I mean, there's a lot of great Captain Canuck collectors. I just happen to
have... I said slabbed, though.
Yeah, I just happen to have the nicest CGC registry set.
Yes. So maybe we can get into that a little later, because I'm sure there's people who are like, what's the CGC registry set?
Who's Captain Canuck?
But yeah, Captain
CGC registry set.
Captain Canuck, I saw an auction online. Starting bid was $99.99 American, which worked out to be about $130 Canadian. And I watched that auction for 7 days and nobody bid on it. And finally, about like 20 minutes before the auction ended, I was like, I'm going to put a bid in. It was a Canadian seller, so there wasn't much shipping, no import fees, none of that stuff that really grinds my gears when it comes to eBay. So I put
you're welcome too, because I was going to like snipe that on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have been really mad and probably kicked you off the show forever.
As you know, I only have 13 copies of number one. I need another 14th copy.
Also one that's a 9.8 slab, because you've got one too. However, you paid more than I did.
I
got a bargain price for this. It's about half the current going price. And I was saying off air, it's got to be one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. The cover is just pristine. Everything about this comic book is pristine. And I've seen lots of CGC 9.8s, but this one, to me, just looks like it's even better than any of the other ones I've seen. Even the Jonah Hex comic I've got, I'm kind of scratching my head that it's a 9.8, because it looks like the cover's on crooked. Hmm. The cover doesn't even seem to be fitting properly. And I was like, well, this is the worst 9.8 that I've seen. But I'm not going to complain, because nobody wants a 9.6.
Well, even with CGC, I mean, it's still, you know, grading is still a subjective thing. And do folks out there know what the CGC is? Have you guys talked about that?
Not in depth.
Okay. Well, basically, without getting into it too much, because we can talk about that later, is it's just a matter of getting a professional to grade your comic book, and they encapsulate it in plastic so that you're rest assured that, you know, it's the condition that's advertised. But even then, there's two guys that look at the comic book, and then there's one guy that kind of supervises. So if you've got...
Can I be the supervisor?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good job.
So if you've got... it's completely possible to have five or six comics that are graded 9.8, and we will see differences between them. I mean,
yeah.
It's still an art form, not a science.
And a 10 would be perfect, absolutely mint perfect, without the single slightest flaw.
Now, there is a Captain Canuck number one from 1975, 10.0. It's supposedly the oldest 10.0 on the registry. So as far as age goes,
because that's 40 years.
Yeah. And it's actually Doug in Manitoba.
Doug Salupa, big-time comic book collector slash vendor.
He may have sold it since, but he did. And I keep eyeballing it every time it shows up on eBay, but I think the starting price is $4,000.
Now, have you, and you've only ever seen it on eBay, you've never seen this in person?
No.
Because
no,
that would be person. That would be something to behold in person.
Yeah.
A 40-year-old comic book that is like literally in better shape than something you could get off the rack.
And of course, 10.0 means perfect.
Absolutely.
There's not a single flaw. This thing looks Like, typically when a comic book even comes off the printing press, by the time it's put into a box and leaves the building, it's a 9.8 at best, because any minor little ding or whatever, that's immediately, you know, 0.2 off, 0.1 off. So to get a 10.0 is not that common.
Yes, pretty uncommon for any comic book. It seems, you know what, just having been like on the CGC website and stuff a lot, I've actually noticed there's a lot of Walking Deads that are 10.0s. I don't know what it, if there's something specific about that comic that makes it better for grading.
Well, it's also a lot easier to get a 10.0 in a modern, brand new comic. Also, some comic books have, you know, nicer covers, nicer cardstock, better printer and stuff like this. So you'll find that certain runs of comics have a better chance of getting a better grade. Like, what is it that I just bought the other day? Ultimate Adventures was done with this really, really glossy but super, super thin cover. And I haven't seen one that doesn't have a billion spine. Okay, a billion's an exaggeration. I haven't seen one that hadn't had at least three or five color breaks along the spine. And it was just, it's actually a hilarious comic book, but that's another detour that we'll talk about later.
Well, the, was it Omega Man number 3, the first Lobo? Its cover, like, because the one I got from you, right, I was surprised, but its cover is thicker, it's sturdier. Right?
So yeah, exactly,
I would think
yeah.
It'd be easier to get a higher grade out of that.
Exactly. But, so, I mean, the fact is that CGC has not been around that particular long compared to the comic industry starting in the 30s, 20s. So to have a 1975 comic book in absolutely pristine condition, that's, you know, is it worth $4,000? I don't know. To the right collector. You know, maybe if I didn't have children and I wasn't paying for college. And
say,
stuff,
if you're not the right collector, there is no right collector out there.
Exactly. Like, you know.
Now, I did also see that there's a 9.9 on the registry.
There is indeed.
For
yeah.
Canuck.
Yeah.
So.
Not as sexy as a 10? Not as sexy as a 10, yes.
But still, even a 9.8, like when I was looking for a Captain Canuck, because you made me love Captain Canuck. And probably for the same reasons that you do, because the Canucks, the comics aren't actually that good, are they?
Well, do you want to get into Canuck right now?
Well, let's to be continued right, in 20 minutes. All right, so now I'll talk about my most recent acquisition, which was just a parking lot deal I did with Marty here, where I just bought Gwenpool, the first appearance of Gwenpool, which is in, Deadpool Secret Wars, number 2, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Is that something like that? Yeah, it's over on the side of the studio. Marty's touching it. Don't touch it.
Yeah,
it's mine.
It's mine now.
It's
mine
actually
now.
Pretty funny because I got a copy of this, and I'm like, Gwenpool, I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks.
And then nobody wanted it.
Yeah, and nobody wanted it. I was trying to sell that sucker at a bunch of different shows, and I'm like pushing it, you know, to yourself. And
he literally waved it in front of my face one day and was like, you should buy this. And I was like, no. And then 3 days later, I was like, hey, can I buy that?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, 20 bucks.
Dan B comes by, and I'm like, Dan, you need this too? You know, and I'm pushing it. Nobody wanted it for $5. Nobody. And then like 3 days later.
Now, was I the first one to ask you about it after it started to be worth something?
It was yes.
Because
yes,
I think I was.
Then I posted on Facebook that I had a few.
Yeah.
And then the flood of calls came. Oh!
I'll take one of those for $5, please.
Now the best part though is that I agreed to pay $20 for this probably a month ago now.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we've like met up and been able to switch the comic book, but it's not even worth that much anymore.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, we should fire it up here.
It's been in flux. So I wish we had, like, you could put a talking app on your phone so it just tells everybody what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
I am Googling eBay.
Currently searching eBay for. Yeah.
You guys chat on amongst yourselves there. What is it? Was it at time for coffee talk? You guys have chat amongst yourselves.
All right. Well, let's, do you got anything that you bought that you want to talk about, Chris?
New Justice League, Batman and Robin Eternal, new Invincible, which has taken a very interesting turn. I guess I'm not allowed to have any spoilers. Although it did, at the end of last month's issue, young Mark found himself back at the beginning of everything back on Earth. And it was quite strange how everything is restarted, even though he has his memory of the last, I don't know how many years or months it's been, but it's quite an interesting turn.
Well, so now Marty has pulled up the listings, and I see some...
Some
wide variations there.
So, yeah, we've got... one fellow's got one sold for $16.50 Canadian.
Plus shipping, of course.
Plus the shipping, yeah. We won't even get into that. Otherwise, I'll start cursing out our friendly neighbors at the down to the south. Another fellow bought one for $47.35. $26. $23, $16.77 plus $26 shipping. Oh, I feel that rant coming on here in a second.
So I paid less for mine than that guy did for his shipping.
$34.20, $26.97, $35.52
So you're saying
$101.
Really? Oh. So I shouldn't feel too bad.
$34.20
I got it for around the going.
Yeah,
rate,
or, not too bad. I mean, yeah. You know, it's a nice book. That'll be worth a dollar in a year. So it, you know, you're doing all right.
Now, just like you know, because you've famously said that you think that like Deadpool is no better than Lobo.
No. You may have mistaken me. I'm just of a certain vintage in comics that I remember. Lobo the main man, and Lobo number one first comic book was $100, and his first appearance in Omega Men was $200, and now it's like $50 and you know 25-cent bin. So it's just like
or cheaper.
A cautionary tale. Like Deadpool's hot right now, and yes, his first appearance there in New Mutants 98 commands a ridiculous amount of money for that comic. Just considering how many of them there are. The print runs in the 90s were outrageous. So I think it's a bubble that's going to burst. I don't think Deadpool's going to be hot forever. People are going to get tired of them shortly, you know, sooner than later. And those books are going to drop. Now, how far do they drop? I mean, even Lobo. You know, nobody likes Lobo anymore. They relaunched him as Twilight Lobo with the sprinkly sparkles in his face and stuff. And, you know, just made a mockery of it. But his first appearance, still $45 Canadian. So, I mean, it's respectable.
So when New Mutants 98 is worth is $45, you'll think about buying a copy.
If you pay $200, you're going to be crying because, you know, Lobo's now $45. You know, it's not a real honest-to-God key. It's younger collectors trying to find that Incredible Hulk 181. They're trying to find that Punisher. Amazing Spider-Man 129. They're trying to find that new modern key, and I just don't think Deadpool is going to be it.
Doesn't it have how many slabbed 9.8 copies? It's over 2,000. Right?
Oh, it's ridiculous. And like I said, the print runs in the 90s. You know, we were talking here.
Like millions.
3,000 is a respectable print run. 6,000 is pretty decent. You know, they're talking about the Star Wars comic from Marvel hitting six figures. Ooh, ah. Spider-Man number one in the 90s there. Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man number one. 2 million copies.
Yeah.
You know, if you were publishing less than 60,000 copies a month, you got canceled. So that means there's minimum 60,000 copies of New Mutants 98 out there. They're out there. Like,
why don't
I
have one,
though?
Well, I think it says there's about like 1,900 just at 9.8.
Yeah, like 1,900 at 9.8 graded at the registry. And something like Captain Canuck number one is, what was there, seven?
Actually, there was 80 at 9.8. Yeah, I was quite impressed. And Sarah was completely blown away, my wife, when I said, there's 80 9.8s.
All right, now I really feel bad for how much I paid for mine.
Well, they're not out there, though, right? Like, you know, if you're
honestly think that there is some boarded up comic shops that didn't make it past the 90s there that have basements full. Like, I was at a toy show once, and a guy pulled out two long boxes. They were unbagged, unboarded, stacked all the way through. One box was Wildcats number one from Image,
yeah.
And the other one was Youngblood number one from Image. Full, packed, mint, like factory condition. These have never been touched other than being put in these boxes.
And if those were keys, then you would be a rich man for picking that up for $10 to take it off his hands.
Exactly. Like, there must have been, you know, again, without the bags and boards, about 300 comic books in each box. So 300 copies of Wildcats number one. It had outrageous print runs in the 90s. And that's just the way it is with New Mutants 98, which is, again, the first appearance of Deadpool. If Deadpool kind of starts to fade a little bit, you're going to find that that book is going to drop in price.
Except right now it's still rising, or at least maintaining its plateau.
Yeah, like,
right?
if you find it inexpensively, or you have it
if
in your
collection,
if you
find it at a yard sale, buy it for a dollar.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, hold on to it, or flip it quick, and in a few years you can maybe get it for a little bit less. Like this Scooby-Doo comic book that everybody's paying $60 for.
Paid. Nobody's paying anything for it now.
Exactly. I mean, I'm positive that... I shouldn't rant too much about this because I have that collectoritis where something comes out. Like, what was that? The black and white Boba Fett action figure variant for Star Wars number one. I'm there midnight, you know, 11:59. I've got my credit card ready and I bought a few copies, so everything was great. And then I flipped them as soon as they sold out, which was like, what, 12:16, something like this. And I got two fellows both buying them for $75 a piece. Well, it's a $40 book now.
Yeah.
You know,
but those guys absolutely had to have it. They wanted it really badly. They got it. They're happy. And
I guess what it comes down to is paying a premium to not have to wait for it to come back down.
Oh,
right.
Exactly. Like,
because there's a lot of things where I've seen, you know, sometimes I just get too gun shy at a certain price point and I'll just wait. And then, you know, a month or two goes by. I'm like, hey, that's $10 cheaper than it was before. Wait another month. It's $10 cheaper than it was the last month.
Well, it's like
if you need it now,
it's like you and I were talking about just a few seconds ago, $4,000 for Captain Canuck 10.0.
Yes.
There's not that many people that would pay that. I am one of those morons who would pay that if I had it.
Yes.
You know, so I really can't blame anybody for doing something that I then turn around and do myself. But sell your New Mutants 98 now. Get your money.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there is a big group of people that believe that some collectors and some stores have boxes or a box full of New Mutants 98 in their basement, you know, and every now and then, yeah, I need some money, throw one up on eBay, right? And loads of them.
Well,
and
see, the other thing that happens is people take a look at something like Walking Dead number one, and that sucker has skyrocketed in price, the TV show and all this stuff. But it's a little bit different than New Mutants 98 in that it really did have a low print run.
Yep.
There's not that many copies of it.
Like, I think that one's around 2,000 to 3,000,
yeah,
right?
It was a black and white comic book about zombies. Image had no faith in the book. They made Robert Kirkman put up front all the costs for the comic. So he had limited resources. He printed off whatever it was, 2,000, 3,000 copies. And away we go. It's not, you know, 60,000 copies. Now, I'm guessing 60,000. We can look it up
for
and find
Deadpool,
out exactly.
I would
New
guess
Mutants
higher
98.
Than that.
It might be higher.
I think it's higher.
But even if it was 60.
Because that was like the height of the
90s.
The
90s
was
also.
Rob Liefeld at his
right,
at
right
his
before
height, right?
X-Force took off.
So
like
I'm
it was,
sure it's got a pretty
to the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, to That's the right. internet. But the other thing is that I was listening to a podcast with Robert Kirkman, and he was basically saying that it was an offhand comment, and he says that what he used to do is double his order of anything that he did. So if he needed 1,000 copies of Battle Pope, he bought 2,000 and put 1,000 in his basement. Now, he didn't go outright and say
that
there
got
are
2,000
copies of Walking Dead number one in his basement, but he didn't go right out and say he doesn't. So,
call it an insurance policy.
You know, I've seen the book as high as $3,000 graded, 9.8, but that $3,000 copy I've seen marked down to $2,700. Marked down to 2,500. I would be surprised if it's not marked down right now. We'd have to ask Victoria, but she, you know, I'm pretty sure it's marked down a little bit more because the super duper collectors have already bought it. It's already in their collection.
Well, it's like when the CGC first came about and was first doing graded copies of stuff, you know, I've heard stories about like Hulk 181s going for $10,000-$20,000 because they're high grade and people just didn't think that high grades existed of this comic book. So somebody, you know, that guy who's got all the money in the world sees that come up and goes, bam, $20,000 to have the greatest copy of this comic ever. But then when people saw that, they all started grabbing their copies, getting them slabbed. Now suddenly the market's not flooded, but there's more there. So people are getting it for a fair overpriced price.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's supply and demand, right? If you have the only Captain Canuck number one 10.0, you can have the balls to say, I want 10 grand. I want $4,000 for it. But if there's 80 copies of Captain Canuck number one in 9.8, you're going to get a deal like you did, $100 for the book. You know, it's just supply and demand.
What did the internet say?
People speculating.
I couldn't find it.
What I saw was above 200,000.
Yeah.
Oh, and again, I wouldn't doubt it at all because it was a hot book at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he was introducing all sorts of new characters, new concepts on a regular basis in that title before it got spun off as
new X-Force. Terribly drawn feet.
So, yeah, you know, everybody kind of, you know, I actually like Rob Liefeld's art.
I like him too.
I don't mind it.
It's the medium is cartoon. Oh man, I'm going to catch such flack for this too because I hate Carmen Infantino, who did The Flash back in the 80s. And because I always find his art too out there. But then Rob Liefeld's art is too out there as well. So, you know, again, personal taste and stuff. But, oh gosh, I know some people that are just going to drill me on that one. But
somebody's shaking their hand at the radio
Marty
right now.
Marty likes Liefeld but doesn't like Infantino.
It's heresy.
So I'm going to catch some flack for that one, I'm sure. But, you know, it was a book I read. I used to get it.
Do you have New Mutants 98?
I don't.
I had it right off the shelf.
I went through a little phase where I got upset at Uncanny X-Men and the crappy stories that they were doing around the 400s, 300s. And I ended up selling a whack of my collection. I think it was like 10 long boxes here in Peterborough. I think I had $500, I think it was. And I know for a fact...
I'll go back in time and give you 600.
That's right.
All the X-Forces were there. All the New Mutants were there. All the Uncanny X-Men. All the X-Men. McFarlane's Amazing Spider-Man. McFarlane's Spider-Man. It was all there. I just had this little rage on for Marvel, and I was tired of them, and I regret that.
Not like what's going on with you and Marvel right now.
Oh. Did you see that pie chart I did?
Yes, I did. Now, first, why don't we make sure, before we segue into more rants,
okay.
Chris, was there anything that you wanted to talk about that you bought this week?
No, I'm good.
All right. And I'm good. I don't know if Marty's probably used all of his time.
Oh, but real quick, though, I did buy a nice copy of Uncanny X-Men 137, Death of Phoenix.
Okay.
I found it at a local comic shop. Sorry, not local. Down Oshawa, Whitby way.
Local-ish.
And it was a marked improvement over the copy that I had.
Yeah. So, say, wasn't that like the third copy you have now?
So I'm not plugging that I have two copies of Uncanny X-Men 137 for sale. But
Well, you already plugged that you got 13 copies of Canuck number one.
Yeah, but they're not for sale.
They're not for sale.
No, I sleep with them. I lay them down on my bed and I roll around in my Captain Canucks. And I'm like, ooh,
they're not meant.
I feel like that was too much information.
Yeah. All I care about is that you ruined them and they're not meant. I don't care what you do with them once they're destroyed. So you got the Death of Phoenix.
Yeah, it was just a fantastic condition comic. It's one of those things where you just come across a book, you know you already got it, but the price is great, the condition is just wonderful, and you just can't say no because you know you can flip the other copy pretty much for the price you pay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did pretty good. In that deal, I also picked up, I think it was Uncanny X-Men 46, I think, in, like, very good condition, so it was pretty nice. So I think I got 3 or 4 X-Men to kind of plug some holes in my collection there.
All right, so now what are we supposed to be ranting about? I'm not, I forget, because we got distracted from the next rant.
I think Chris has some news. Comic book news.
Do you want to do your comic book news, Chris? Wait, we've got to, I guess we can make it quick. Let's see if I can get this, there we go. Comic book news with Chris.
All right, how much time do I have got here?
Oh, as much as you need.
Okay, so sad news. Murphy Anderson, Sam would be touched by this because he was the co-creator of Xantana, passed away. Pretty famous artist. I'm not overly familiar with his work.
Oh yeah, he was one of those comic book artists that was called upon quite a bit. He was in the bullpen and at DC, and he did a lot of work.
He's in the Jack Kirby Hall of Fame, Will Eisner Hall of Fame. Yeah, so yeah, absolutely. He's huge.
He's not one of the most famous artists of that time, but he's got a very, very, very impressive body of work, and you know his style at the time was pretty mainstream for that time period. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why he didn't really stand out as much. He didn't have like a style like Carmen Infantino. Yeah. But great artist. Really, really nice guy.
Well, because I read something that he was called in to redraw something on a series. He was called in to redraw Superman's face or something like that. I want to say New Gods, but I'm not sure. But I just read it today when I was looking up. So yeah, he was. You know, they bring him in to do touch-ups and whatnot. And
oh yeah, absolutely. Like I said, he was just one of those artists that editors could like turn to and get stuff done.
Yeah. I think we were going to try and talk about this last week, but Bob Kane receiving the
yes, that was on the agenda. Yeah.
Star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
What a crock.
Well, we could probably devote a whole show to the Bill Finger, Bob Kane.
I'm just going to put this out there. You folks do know that you actually buy yourself the Hollywood Walk of Fame star. You nominate yourself.
I would have to think so based on people who have it.
And the committee there will choose from the number of people, and you know other people submit their applications repeatedly over and over and over again, and their PR companies do it. And yeah, like you said, some of the folks that are on that Hollywood Walk of Fame, you kind of have to question. I mean, how long did it take for Adam West to get his start? I think he was trying, his daughter and Ralph Garman were trying for 10, 15 years to try to get him his start. He finally got it. So
yeah, like I used to love all that stuff, right? Like hearing about this, though, I'd love to go there and see it. And then I think it was like Britney Spears when she's like 13. I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I don't believe in that stuff anymore.
Just jealousy. Well, you guys are just jealous.
Yeah, the other thing there, too, is, I mean, it just because I don't like Britney Spears doesn't mean that Britney Spears is not a pop sensation that is deserving of the same recognition as maybe somebody else. Because, you know, Kanye West, not my cup of tea, but you cannot argue with his sales figures. He sells records. You know, he sells T-shirts. So.
But not as many as Bob Kane sold Batman.
That's right. But to me, it was just like, when I thought about the Walk of Fame, it was people that had been around for a long time, and they were finally getting this star.
Recognition.
And then when I find out that Britney Spears, who used to be a Mouseketeer, has one album, and all of a sudden she's got I'm like, wait a minute, something's not right here.
Yeah, so it is a selection process. You know, it's not like you can just go out there, give them $100,000, and instantaneously you get a Walk of Fame.
But it wouldn't hurt.
But that is the process, you nominate yourself. It's like some of the business awards here in town and stuff. You nominate yourself, and if you can convince enough people to back you, then away you go. And if you got a million-dollar marketing firm behind you, then voila, star.
All right, next.
But Bob Kane, yeah. So Zack Snyder presented. Jim Lee accepted on behalf of the family because Bob Kane passed away a while back. But there's a whole debate about Bill Finger, which...
Yes, well, and some of the publications and TV shows are giving Bill Finger credit for Batman now.
You want the Cliff Notes on that real quick? do people understand who Bill Finger was?
Martin's raring to go.
Bob Kane is the creator of Batman. He wrote the Batman. He did the Batman. And he was an amazing gentleman at contract law. Because he managed to get an ironclad, amazing contract from DC Comics regarding Batman that the fellows that invented Superman did not. And basically it said that no matter what, it says created by Bob Kane.
Period.
So, period.
The end.
If Bob Kane decides to hire three writers and have them ghostwrite Batman comics, it still says written by Bob Kane. So Bob Kane created Batman, but he had an assistant that he hired named Bill Finger. And Bill Finger gave us the costume, the Batmobile, Robin, Commissioner Joker. Gordon.
Apparently he brought in the card with the Joker on it.
Yeah,
as well,
the playing card with the Joker. Like, he contributed so much to what we know of as Batman. And you know, that happens throughout the ages. Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill added so much to the Batman lore. To not credit them with what has happened with Batman is a bit of a shame as well, because before them, Batman was fighting big giant robots and walking telephones and, you know, just being ridiculous. And then all of a sudden, Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams come along, and he's the Dark Knight detective that everybody likes.
Yeah.
So of all the creators that sort of helped out Bob Kane, Bill Finger definitely deserves this credit. And I understand that that this was all arranged by special arrangement with the Bob Kane family. I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that Bob Kane, rest his soul, is no longer with us to complain and say, absolutely not, this will not stand.
Well, according to the number one source of news on the internet, Wikipedia,
yeah.
Bob Kane, even as soon as Bill Finger passed away, he started saying, yeah, he kind of helped out a bit. And, you know, once there was nobody to be like, yeah, so pay me my money, that was years ago before people really got all
this is
litigious.
This is not like Stan Lee and Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby, who did what and where. This is well known within the industry that Bill Finger did a lot. And it's just the fact that Bob Kane's contract was so precise and so specific that, you know, there was other creators that had a stable of creators helping them out. Like, I'm trying to remember who, but isn't it Charles Schulz, the Peanuts? He didn't draw a lot of his books.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure, but there were other artists that did the same thing, and it's not like it wasn't uncommon. And, you know, Bill got paid a salary and had benefits and dental care, maybe, I don't know. So it's not like he was hosed or robbed, but from an artistical integrity point of view, the man deserves the credit. There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
And there was the quote in the Wikipedia from Bob Kane. Now that my longtime friend and collaborator is gone, I must admit that Bill never received the fame and recognition he deserved. He was an unsung hero. I often tell my wife, if I could go back 15 years before he died, I would like to say, I'll put your name on it, you deserve it.
Which is great to say after somebody's long gone.
Yeah.
Well, as somebody who was born in the 60s, I can tell you that with age comes wisdom, and you kind of look back at things and go, geez, if I could have done this different, if I could have done that different. So I'm sure that was the case, but when push came to shove and he should have been giving the credit, he didn't.
Yes. All right, next news story, if we got one.
Just a lot of, a couple, there's this new Star-Lord coming out, which apparently is the definitive year one. So all the other past origins are gone now. Marvel's telling his actual origin, year one of the Star-Lord, of how he became the Star-Lord.
That's because the Star-Lord that you know in the comic books, in the movies and stuff, that's not who the character was when he first was conceived and created.
So, but he will be now.
But he will be now, which, you know, I've got no problem with. I mean, you know, I'm not a big retcon guy because, you know, Wally West is the Flash, and who's this Barry Allen jerk on TV? But we won't get into that.
No, we definitely don't have time for that.
First crossover among the new Star Wars books is Star Wars Vader Down.
And that made me instantly drop Darth Vader because I am so tired of crossovers and secret this and wars that and converging this. And then I was reading recently, not to sabotage you.
No, go ahead.
But I was reading recently that Darth Vader Down has just an insane number of pre-orders. Just crazy number. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. And
are they going to kill Vader off?
The Google skills are weak, but...
Well, seeing as how Star Wars takes place between Star Wars and Empire, I don't think so.
But if it sells comic books...
That's right.
Well, those Star Wars titles.
They'll retcon the movies so that the movie is now somebody else, not Anakin, at the end.
Like those Star Wars comics. Those Star Wars comics are selling.
What? Wait a minute.
Spoilers. Darth Vader dies. Anakin's Darth Vader.
Yeah, those Star Wars comics are just selling like crazy. Like September sales numbers, Star Wars Shattered Empire was number one. Star Wars was number two. Darth Vader was number five. You know, and they're selling 200,000 copies of Star Wars Shattered Empire, number one. 135,000 copies of Star Wars number nine. So between
is that taking into account all the variants?
Yes, that's total sales. And the variants have kind of cut down a little bit, I think, on the Star Wars number nine. There was how many were there? Three?
I have no idea.
Yeah. So,
but whatever record Star Wars number one set with the variants, I think the Dark Knight Part 3 is trying to beat it because those variants just keep coming out. Oh, anyways.
No comment.
Anyway, so I'll go
Sam already commented on that in our intro.
Yeah. So I read the series Jupiter's Legacy, Frank Miller, and I say his name quietly, Frank Quietly. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And then they came out with Jupiter's Circle, which was a different artist, and I'm like, no. So apparently Jupiter's Legacy 2 is coming in next year, next spring, and it has Miller and Quietly back again as the artist, so I'll probably pick that up. And then three new Marvel titles announced this week. So what's that count now? 75 or 80 new number ones in the next few months?
They're having a hard time getting the ones that they've announced out the door.
Yeah, so International Iron Man, which I just laugh at that title. Nighthawk, which I'm not sure if he needs his own title.
Isn't Nighthawk like Darkhawk's like younger brother or something?
He's from the Supreme Squadron.
Oh, yeah.
And the Punisher.
Oh, and they also announced Hyperion, which is also from the Squadron Supreme.
That's right. Yeah, so that's four. So they're up to about 80, 100. I don't know. I lost count.
Now, don't tell my buddy Leonard Kirk this, but I decided not to get Squadron Supreme. Yeah. But now with all these spin-offs, I might have to take a look at it, take another peek at it.
And two trailers were out last week, a big one and an okay one. So the okay one was Jessica Jones for Netflix, the new Netflix series, which looks interesting.
Who?
Yeah, Jessica Jones.
Who?
Star-Lord, man.
Is Jessica Jones related to, like, what am I looking for here? Jean Grey and all these other characters that have no code names? I don't understand that. I don't understand. You're a superhero. You're supposed to have a code name. That's the rules.
What would her name be? Strong Girl? Or
didn't she start in a book called Alias?
Yes.
But I'm assuming that caused some problems with the Alias TV
probably,
show.
Probably,
At the time, I thought it was the TV show. I didn't realize it was a totally different character.
Yeah.
It wasn't until New Avengers first came around that she was hanging out with Luke Cage all the time that I actually realized that's a totally different character.
She's having his baby.
Spoilers.
And
that's not spoilers. So that's New Avengers. That's like 5-10 years old.
And of course, there was this little trailer, this little movie called Star Wars: The Force Awakens. It was okay. Although I do love the fact that somebody on YouTube actually went and got all the clips from all the different whatevers we've seen so far and pieced the whole thing together, and it was awesome.
Okay, rant time.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Star Wars. We have been here before.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there watching the trailer for Phantom Menace and just getting so 7-year-old excited and hyper and the epic sounds of those troop transports coming down over the hill and this is going to be awesome. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was not. It was what are those words I'm not allowed to use on the radio? It was horrible.
It was really, really
bad. It was very, very bad. You know, sheep are running around going, bad. But the stuff that we are seeing in the trailers are much longer and there's a lot more content. The people involved, you know, J.J. Abrams is saying that the studio gave him carte blanche and final cut. This is a J.J. Abrams movie. Yeah. It hasn't been interfered with by studios and insurance companies and completion. Fantastic Four. So it's going to have an opening act, a middle act, and a third act that makes sense, not some weird put together third act that doesn't Fantastic Four. So I'm excited. I'm 7 years old again. I want to see J.J. Abrams' new Star Wars. I mean, who didn't? Who was a massive Star Wars fan? Of course, if you're a Star Trek fan, you may not. But if you're a Star Wars fan, who didn't get goosebumps when Han Solo comes out and goes, Chewie, we're home.
Oh, that was the best part.
I mean, come on. Or the Millennium Falcon, you know, just...
Yeah.
Like, who... Oh. I'm going to mop down back here a little bit. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
There's one thing we're guaranteed with a J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie, though, which is lots of lens flare.
Nope. Did you look? There was not a single lens flare.
They probably hid it from the trailer.
Lens flare is a Trek franchise. He's left that behind.
And, you know, not that we're supposed to be ranting about movies, but lots of people rant about his lens flare in Star Trek. But I love it.
I thought it was awesome.
I think it makes everything look like so amazingly futuristic.
Well, the thing
and
about
just like so white and
the thing about Star Trek is Star Trek was supposed to be utopian. It was supposed to be perfect. This is perfect harmony. You know, it's scientific exploration, not war. So the fact that the Enterprise was gleamingly perfect,
yeah,
shiny and glistening, and it didn't have it. There was no dirt. There was no scuffs on the wall. And the lens flare just kind of making it look like everything was reflecting. That made sense. It made sense. Yeah. Maybe a little bit annoying here and there, you know, granted. But it made sense from an artistic point of view. Star Wars is not that. Star Wars is gritty.
Yeah, Star Wars is the dirty future.
Is the biggest hunk of junk in the galaxy.
That's right.
All right.
I mean, this would cause a whole other debate, but where's Luke? He's not on the new poster. There's no spoilers. He wasn't on the poster that they released.
Well, I mean, spoilers if you talk about the fan theories about where Luke is what's going on.
I've got some theories myself.
Well,
anyways.
They're all theories, though, so it's not really a spoiler. I mean, we don't know, but don't forget that this is a three-part story. Yeah. This is going to be three films. Yeah. So Boba Fett wasn't on the cover of the movie poster for Star Wars, and yet turned out to be an extremely popular character and important and stuff. So
but Luke was in the first trailer, like his voiceover. I mean, we see his arm.
His voiceover was, and there's been plenty of pictures of him on the set, and you know, the fact that they put him on a fitness program with Carrie Fisher to get them in shape and stuff like that, so they're presentable for Hollywood. You know, so we know he'll he's in the flick.
But in what capacity?
I'm positive that this is on purpose by JJ to get the excitement going, get the hype engine going. He might be in every single scene as far as we know.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact that he didn't put them on the thing, it's like him and what was the other fellow there where they were having the little special effects fight, and JJ put a mock-up of the Batmobile and put it as a part of the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, just goofing around. So, I mean, he's going to be there. There's no doubt in my mind. Like, is he going to be dead and he's going to be like a Ben Kenobi ghost? I don't know, but he's going to be there.
I'm calling it the last scene, the last before it fades to black is when we see him. And that's it.
Oh, absolutely.
Big reveal and then done.
Totally possible.
And then
totally
popcorn
possible.
Thrown at the movie screen like, we need more right now.
There's going to be more. The Disney machine is going
to have to wait.
These guys out.
I don't want to wait.
Well, the nice thing about the way that they're going to be doing it is they're going to be releasing the trilogy every other year, and in between there's going to be other Star Wars stories. So,
but I've already been waiting 30 years for a good Star Wars movie.
Disney's going to milk this LucasArts cow for as much milk as it can get.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like the all these new
Marvel
movies being announced.
Well, Christine informed me the other day that I think she said there was Star Wars craft dinner now on the shelves at Walmart.
Sweet.
So
yeah, but
you can already buy the Star Wars makeup.
Combining two of my favorite things.
There's university credits in how Star Wars was marketed and merchandised the first time around. I mean, it was just a success story beyond belief. Yeah. I personally had Star Wars underwear, Star Wars bed sheets.
Still does.
Star Wars
wearing nightmare. Them now.
No, wait.
There's windows in the
studio. I can't
see
them past my beer gut, but I think I might be wearing Ninja Turtle underwear. But, you know, I've got the R2-D2 salt and pepper shakers now, you know, and the mugs and the coffee. There's no way this thing doesn't get marketed to Ulta. This is Disney doing what Disney does, taking an intellectual property, milking it for every single dollar it can, and making us happy that they're doing this. I would buy Star Wars craft dinner. No problem. I would love Star Wars craft dinner.
Did you notice the, I was at Walmart yesterday, the reissue of, like, there's two versions of Luke, the black outfit and the gray outfit from Dagobah. Like, these are reissues that are right now. Chewbacca. Or I think Chewie's a new one.
What, these are like the 3 3/4 figures or the 6-inch blacks?
No, the...
Along with stuff from the new movie, they are re-releasing some. I think I saw a C-3PO R2-D2 set and stuff like this. And it just makes sense. I mean, you know, what self-respecting Star Wars fan is not going to show their kids the original trilogy before this film hits? I mean, it's like in my house, we watch it at least 3 times a year.
But I have sad news for you. Yeah. For people younger than us, the prequel trilogy is the original trilogy.
And you know what?
Oh, Chris just died.
You know what? And again, I had some pretty harsh comments there about the new trilogy, but I guarantee you there was some 7-year-old sitting there watching Phantom Menace, and he was just as mesmerized as I was in 1977. You know, those toys sold.
And then his dad came in and said, "You're watching garbage.
You did very nasty things with my childhood."
But the animated shows that are on TV have, in a lot of cases, were better than the prequels. Like the current Star Wars Rebels, I'm really enjoying that. So, Vader's in there. Spoiler.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of the Clone Wars one, but I haven't seen, I think, maybe like the first 3 or 4 episodes of the Rebels, and it looked like a fun cartoon. Like I don't know. I know kids don't watch cartoons the way we used to.
No.
So I just don't know how popular they are, or whether they're just filling time on the Disney Channel, or how that all works. But
season 2 just started.
So. My nephew watches them, and he likes it, so must be okay.
I like the droid on the show. He's giving R2 a run for his money.
All right, well, I guess that's the end of our news segment. It's time for, what did you read this week? Chris, nothing. Marty, nothing.
Dan, nothing. All right.
Now, our next segment, let's talk about the Marvel comics that I read. Oh, we're out of time.
Yeah. Next week.
Next week.
Did Martin talk too much? Did he?
Every show, Dan's worried that we won't have enough to talk about.
That we literally went into this one with nothing.
There's lots to talk about.
There's always lots to talk about.
If you guys
ever
go on one of our epic road trips, you'll notice that there's the only time the conversation ends in the car is about like the last half hour of the ride home, where everyone's tired and caffeinated to death and tired and cranky, but... I just want to say quickly, Titans Hunt, go get it. It's awesome. It's amazing. If I'm here next time.
What are you talking about?
That stuff that we didn't read. Remember, we didn't read anything? Titans Hunt.
Titans Hunt.
Titans Hunt.
I picked it up.
By DC Comics,
Titans Hunt.
I might pick it up tomorrow, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Chris is going to pick it up tomorrow.
If you're not picking it up, I'm buying you a copy because it's pretty fantastic. We'll talk about that next time I'm here.
Yes, and next week we will not be having our regularly scheduled show because it's Halloween and some of us have some young families that are going to be trick-or-treating, so we're going to have put together a best of show. That's right, 5 shows in and we're going to the best of show.
Speaking of which, I noticed that I'm Batman in the intro, so I was just wondering, do I have to get edited in there now if I promise to show up?
Yeah,
if
you come to another show, I'll edit something for you.
Okay, well, so I'm Batman.
All right, well, so that's been another rant-filled fun week here on Hey Kids Comics. Tune in next week for our Halloween Best Of show, and then we'll be back with all new fresh rants in November.
You're listening to Trent Radio 92.7 on your FM dial.
C-triple-F at the corner of Park Hill and George.
Sounds good to me. Hey, Emily, quit being such a space hog.